Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey there, welcome to The Dr. Nina Show. I'm Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, and I'm a psychoanalyst specializing in food, weight, and body image issues, and I am here to help you lose weight without dieting. That means no more counting calories or carbs, no more thinking about food all the time. It really is possible to lose weight and gain health, all without ever going on another diet. Today, I'm going to open up the show to callers. I have no guests today, so the guests are going to be you callers, so please call in and tell me what's on your mind. The call-in number is 818-602-4929. Again, 818-602-4929. So I also want to pick up where I left off last week, where I was talking about how vital your relationship to yourself is when it comes to what's going on with food, weight, body image issues, and all of that. And what I was saying was that your relationship to yourself is so important. You've got to learn to be a friend to yourself. And by the way, if you're already nice to yourself, hey, it's easy to become even nicer. I think it was, who was it who said that it's the start of a lifelong relationship to yourself? Maybe Mark Twain or someone like that. Anyway, so I wanted to give you some strategies for how do you do that, okay? So I had talked last week about, we talked about crack the code of emotional eating and how to track your triggers. If you missed the show, you can always listen to the archives on LA Talk Radio, or you can also subscribe to the show on iTunes and listen to it then. So today, I want to talk about how to baby yourself, because one great way to revitalize your sense of lovability and to increase your sense of self-acceptance is with a baby picture. So we're going to take an action, and you are going to go and get a baby picture. So first, here's what you're going to do. You're going to write down the last mean thing you said to yourself. And I'm going to guess it was probably pretty recent. So whatever mean thing that you said to yourself, like, oh, I can't believe I ate that. I have no willpower. I'm such a loser. I suck. I'm fat. All those mean thoughts. You're going to write them down on a piece of paper or put them in your notes in your phone somewhere. Then you're going to look at the baby in your baby photo. And I want you to try to say to the baby what you just said to yourself recently. Whatever the mean thing was that you said to yourself, try saying it to the baby. For example, when I did this with a group, and someone said, what they had said to themselves, what she had said to herself was, you are disgusting, you have no willpower, you need to get a grip. And so I told her, look at your baby picture and say to that baby, you are disgusting, you have no willpower, you need to get a grip. And she couldn't do it. Couldn't do it. I mean, it's such a powerful exercise. And this person who, she was so hard on herself, she was so unbelievably self-hating and cruel to herself, constantly criticizing herself for everything, not just her weight, she started to cry and she said, God, you know, I just want to protect the baby in the picture. I don't want to say anything mean to her. And that's the point of this exercise, right? When you want to protect yourself, you're not going to hurt yourself with words. But let's say you get out your cutest, most adorable baby pictures. And whether you're a girl or a guy, hey, all babies are cute and adorable. Let's say you look at that baby picture and you just don't feel that wish to protect yourself like the woman from my support group. Maybe you look at that baby picture and you feel indifferent. Maybe you feel disgusted. If that is the case, ask yourself whose eyes you are looking through to see yourself, through whose eyes are you looking when you look at yourself in the picture? Because on another time, someone did this exercise, a guy, and he said, God, you know, I look at this baby picture, and he said, I just want to tell that baby to stop being such a baby. Well, what do you think he heard when he was growing up? Every time he got sad or upset, what do you think he heard? If you're thinking that he was always being told, stop being such a baby, you are correct. Ding, ding, ding. Wait a second. Here's my... I love my... Yeah! Oh, I love my sound effects. Anyway, so he was always being told, stop being such a baby. So he was still looking at himself through his father's eyes. And he had to get in touch with the fact that it's okay to feel whatever he feels and not be so mean to himself. Because when you're mean to yourself, you feel bad. When you feel bad and you don't have a nice voice there that's accessible to be kind to yourself and loving, what do you think you do? You go to food to resolve that pain. So basically, you want to give yourself what you needed at the time that you felt the most terrible in your life. So this baby, this little boy who felt like he couldn't cry, needed to give himself a permission to cry and to get in touch with what he felt without telling himself to be such a baby. And essentially, this exercise really helps you connect to a sense of love for yourself, kind of an understanding and support. And it's like I said, it's really powerful, and it takes practice, but practice makes progress. Okay, so that's the first thing that you can actually do, because I wanted to give you guys some actionable steps to take, not just food for thought, but real things that you can do to help reconnect with yourself. Because when you connect with yourself and you treat yourself with kindness, you're not going to use food for comfort or escape. The second thing you can do is practice encouraging yourself. Now, I often hear people say they are just sick and tired of battling their weight. They think they're just losers. They think nothing is ever going to work. They're disgusted with themselves. And I ask them, so, you know, if your friend told you she was struggling with your weight, would you say that she was a big loser and nothing was ever going to work and that you were disgusted with her? And they, of course, they always look shocked and they're like, no, I would never say that to my friends. I don't think you would either, right? Of course you wouldn't. That's mean. So I said, well, what do you say to your friends? And they always say something like, oh, you know, I'd say, like, I know you're struggling, and I want to be here for you, and you're amazing, and I love you, and let me know how I can best support you. So, you know, what's going on with you? And that's exactly what encouragement sounds like. So, let me ask you, is that how you talk to yourself, or not so much? I'm guessing not so much. So think about something that you're struggling with right now. It could be your weight. It could be something going on in your life, a relationship. It could be about a situation at work. It could be something with friends, loved ones, anything. Think about something that's going on that's difficult or painful to think about. And it can also be about something you don't have. Like maybe you feel stuck in some way. You feel like you're never going to get something that you want, whether it's inner peace or something tangible. Whatever it is, I want you to imagine that it's not you who's going through this struggle. It's your best friend. And then write down everything you would say to your friend. Imagine you're talking to your friend. Your friend is struggling. What are you going to say to your friend? And really access, okay, what is that? How do you talk to your friend? What words would you use? Then say those things to yourself. And unless you are particularly mean to your friend and say awful mean things and make accusations, I think this exercise is going to help connect you with a loving, encouraging part of yourself. Because remember, thoughts lead to emotions, which lead to behavior. So if you're only looking at the behavior and you're only thinking about dieting or not eating carbs or whatever is going on, then you're not going to get anywhere because it's not sustainable. But if you change the way you think, that changes the way you feel. So if you say to yourself, oh, you're disgusting, I can't believe you, I can't believe the number on the scale, disgusting. Well, you're going to feel terrible, just terrible, because you're mean to yourself. And that makes you vulnerable to using food to escape. And people say all the time, why? I want to lose weight, but, I just can't stop eating ice cream or whatever. That's because they don't know how to encourage and support themselves. So one thing is to stop that mean voice, be encouraging, not discouraging. And the second thing is to then respond to yourself, which is, what we just have been talking about. Respond to yourself in a way that's supportive and loving and kind. And when you do that, you give yourself comfort words. When you give yourself comfort words, you stop needing comfort food. See how that works? It sounds so simple, and it is hard. But again, practice makes progress. Okay. Anyone want to call me? The number is 818-602-4929. I would love to hear from you and see what's going on in your life and let me know how I can help you or clarify things, anything to do with food, weight, or body image issues. Okay, the next thing that you're going to do, the next actionable step is, I call it mirror, mirror on the wall. Okay, so this is hard. This is one of the hardest but most powerful things you can do to feel better about yourself. So first, I want you to go find a mirror. Or if you're near a mirror, look in the mirror. Look in the mirror, look at yourself, and say these words. Say, I accept you. Very simple, right? Sounds simple. Hard to do. I used to do this in one of my therapy groups. I would pass around a mirror and everyone would take turns looking into the mirror and saying, I accept you. And you know what? It was so hard for people to do. In fact, I stopped doing it because I found out that people were so afraid I was going to do that in group that they didn't want to show up. So I stopped doing that in my group, but I think it's good for all of you to do in the privacy of your own homes. So the people who did it in the group found it uncomfortable, and it was difficult, and it was painful, and it was just awkward, and they felt really weird until they did it and did it again and did it again. Because it is so powerful to look at yourself in a mirror with an attitude of acceptance. When you are looking with an attitude of acceptance, you're not looking for flaws. You're accepting those flaws. Because you know what? Imperfection is actually what makes us interesting. Because you're not just looking at the image in the mirror. You are more than the person in the mirror. But you're looking at the whole person that you are. And you've got to find things that you like about yourself, both your physical self and your personality. So I don't care how much you weigh or how much you think you should weigh. I think you can look in the mirror and maybe you like your eyes. You like your smile. Maybe you like your curves. Maybe you like your height. Maybe you also can appreciate your resilience, your intelligence, your ability to be spunky or goofy or reflective or thoughtful or whatever. Maybe you like that you are spiritual or spirited, that you are caring, that you're curious. So why do I have people say, I accept you and not I love you? Why acceptance and not love? That is because accepting yourself means there are things you love about yourself and things you don't love. And that's okay, because that's part of the totality of who you are. So remember, nobody does you better than you. When you accept yourself, when you accept the things you like, when you accept the things you don't like, you're just going to feel better about yourself. And again, thoughts lead to feelings, lead to behavior. When you say, I accept you, I accept me, I accept you, person in the mirror, you feel okay. You feel, if not good, not bad. And when you feel good about yourself overall, you are again less likely to use food for comfort or distraction. And that's why this mirror exercise, while it can be challenging, can be very, very powerful. So I encourage you to give it a try. Okay, next we're going to do something else to help you with your relationship to yourself. And we're going to stop the fat talk. An important step in having a strong and positive relationship with yourself is to really hear how you're talking to yourself and to your body. So take a moment to think about it. You know, how do you talk about your body? Do you say things like, oh, my thighs are huge, or ugh, look at the flab on my stomach, or oh, I'm disgusting? If that is familiar, you're engaging in fat talk. The way you talk about yourself affects the way you feel about yourself, which again, you know, leads to overeating or binging. So remember, you are so much more, like in the mirror exercise, go back to that. Remember, you are so much more than the person in the mirror. You are so much more than what you look like. So just for one day, but hopefully longer, try it just for one day. One day is doable, right? Put a freeze on discussing body size and shape. Just stop talking about your size or anyone else's. Just try it. Just for today. Like, what would you be talking about if you couldn't disparage your body? If you couldn't say anything bad about your body, what else would be on your mind? Maybe you'd have other thoughts on your mind. Maybe you'd have problems at work or with friends. Maybe you'd be worried about your kids. Maybe upset with your kids. Maybe you'd be missing someone who's moved away or you're out of touch with or passed away. You know, maybe you'd be dissatisfied with some aspect of your life, with your job, your relationship, your lack of relationship. See, fat talk actually serves a purpose. It like food, like turning to food when you're upset, it is a frenemy. It is a friend. It does something for you, and it also hurts you. So how is it a friend? Fat talk keeps you turning on yourself and distracting from other difficult, painful thoughts and emotions that actually need your attention. So fat talk keeps you in a toxic and cruel relationship with yourself, and it distracts you from your true self. So remember this, the next time you call yourself fat, fat is a substance, not a feeling. Fat is a substance, not a feeling. Hey, that deserves one more repetition. Fat, the F word, is a substance, not a feeling. So remember, losing weight, that can take some time, but you know what? You can drop the fat talk in no time. And I guarantee you, you're going to feel a lot better when you're not constantly attacking yourself. You're going to feel so much better. Okay. The next thing, the next actionable step that I want you guys to take is to go on a fast. And you may be thinking, what is she talking about? She's a no diet person. Go on a fast. What are you saying? Well, it's a special, unique kind of fast. It is a magazine fast, or a magazine diet. So something that keeps us in that mode of constant fat talk is the media that we take in. So I want you to go on a fast, or you know, a fasting diet, a diet that will only take a few hours but will help you for a lifetime. And that is, you're going to go on a magazine diet or a fast. This is what you're going to do. You're going to go through your house and find every fitness, fashion, or gossip magazine you have. Every single one, and toss them all in the recycler. Just get them out of your sight. And that means every magazine: Glamour, Shape, Cosmo, Vogue, Marie Claire, Women's Fitness, Men's Fitness, everything, everything, everything. Get rid of them all. Why am I asking you to do this? Because even if you consciously know that most of the models you're looking at are like airbrushed and photoshopped and they're like 17 years old, even if you consciously know that, you still get affected by those photos. I guarantee you, none of the people in the photos look like their photos. But it makes us think, we who are looking at these magazines, think that that's somehow attainable or how we should look. And it, even if you consciously, intellectually know that, if you rationally know it, there's another part of you that's like, oh, but I should look like that somehow. So get rid of all of them. Just get rid of all of them. And if you go to the store and you're waiting in line and you're waiting to check out and all those magazines are right there, ignore them. Look at something else. Look at your phone. Just do not look at any magazines. Try it for at least, well, I said a few hours, but try it for a week. You are going to be surprised at how much better you feel about yourself when you're not being exposed to these unrealistic, unattainable images that no actual human can live up to, and not unless they have a great makeup artist and a great Photoshop editor. And by the way, don't stop there. Don't stop with magazines. While you're at it, gather up every single one of your diet books, every single one of them. I am talking about the books you've read and all those books that you plan to read later. Put those books in a box and then recycle them. Do not recycle them by bringing them to the library or donating them to a friend, because you know what? Nobody needs those books. If it's a diet book, it has no place in your head or your house. And by the way, if you subscribe to any Facebook groups or get any alerts or emails from diet programs like Facebook weight loss diet kind of groups, stop those alerts. Unsubscribe from them. Cancel your subscription, because all they do is make you feel like you're not doing enough, or they keep you in that mode of dieting. And again, diets don't work. Diets don't work. I mean, they work until you go off them, but you can't stay on them. And diets ultimately don't work because they only deal with food. And they do not deal with why you're eating. They just deal with what you're eating. And ultimately, it is not what you're eating that is the true problem. It is what's eating at you. And by the way, just, you know, why stop with magazines and diet books if you... Hold on, I have a caller. Hold on. Hi, caller, you're on with Dr. Nina. Hello?
Hi, this is Jessica.
Hi, Jessica. How are you doing? This is Jessica, regular caller. How are you, Jessica?
Yeah, I'm good. I can't talk for too long today because I have an appointment, but I just had a quick question. I was wondering about triggers. With everything going on in the media right now, I feel like a lot of people might be feeling triggered by like everything around them. I feel like sometimes triggers are just like in a TV show, it will remind you of something that makes you turn to food or turn away from food. But I was wondering how you deal with it when it seems to be everywhere you look, like when it's in the news and just everywhere.
What are you referring to when you say triggers? I'm guessing that you're referring to maybe what's going on with the news with the sexual assault and the hashtag Me Too. Is that what you're talking about?
Because that's just asking how you deal with triggers.
Well, you're going a little bit in and out. So I think that when you it's a good question, because so many people think they're being triggered by food, and really they're being triggered by a situation. And I know you said you had an appointment, so you know if you have to go, you have to go. Hopefully you'll keep listening. But so usually you are being triggered by a situation. And when you can address, like, okay, what is it that's triggering you? What is it that you're feeling? What does it mean? what does it mean about you? What does it mean about your world? Then you can directly address that which is triggering you, rather than just deal with how it affects you.
Yeah, I guess my question is more, I am going in and out. I can hear myself. But I guess my question is, like, when you are aware of the trigger already, like, you, like, say you see something in the news that, like, you know is triggering to you, how do you stop, like, how do you stop yourself from turning to, like, an unhealthy way to deal with it, even when you know that that is what's triggering you? Like, I'm not unaware of it and then turning to food and just saying, like, oh, I just wanted this snack. Like, I'm very aware of the trigger, so I guess I'm just wondering how I deal with that and not turn to something that's not good for me.
Right. It's a great question, Jessica. One of the things that I recommend is what I was talking about earlier. You know, that's the self-talk and the encouragement. If one of your friends was feeling upset and triggered and just getting really, really anxious, what would you say to a friend? What would you say to a friend?
That I'm just there for them, and that anything that they need, that I understand, and anything they need, like, I'm here for them.
Okay. So you give them comfort, and then I think you also, so what you just described was being letting them know you're there for them, which is comforting, and then you also want to offer hope. So what you want to do for yourself is also say to yourself, acknowledge, yes, this is upsetting me, whatever the situation is. It's upsetting me, and I understand why it is upsetting me. And I'm going to remind myself that it's not always going to feel this way. So, you know, I use the acronym VARY. I think I've talked about it before. Validate, acknowledge, and reassure yourself. Often when we get triggered, we just feel overwhelmed and flooded by feelings, and we don't know what to do with them. But what you mm-hmm. do is you have to access a part of you that is not just in the feeling, a part of you that can be responsive to yourself, and to say, yes, this is triggering, and this is triggering, this is hard, for these reasons. And reassure yourself, it's not always going to feel this way. Of course I feel this way, but you know what? I'm going to get through this. When you give yourself validation and acknowledgement and reassurance, it is calming. The other thing you can do, by the way, just to deal with when you might be so triggered that you can't access that part of you, you want to use the senses exercise. So you want to ground yourself in present reality. And it sounds kind of goofy when I explain it, but this really does help you calm down. And what you do is you think about your sight, your hearing, your smell, and your touch. Everything but taste. So the four senses exercise is you just think, okay, what am I seeing? And if you're alone, it helps to say it out loud. So, you know, I'm here in the studio. Like, oh, I see two computer monitors. I see a plant. I see three microphones. I see three leather chairs. You just name everything that you see, and then you say, okay, what do I hear? And you name everything that you hear, whether aloud or in your head. And then what you're touching. So, like, okay, you know, there's a leather under my hands, or there's a hard surface of the desk, you know. And what does that do? It just creates a centering. So it helps your mind from stop spinning out.
Yeah, because I feel like my thing is, like, I'm very aware of my triggers, but then once I am triggered, I can't stop my anxiety. Like, I just like I start spiraling about it. So
yeah, so that's why you like, want to stop thinking, and that helps you think. That helps your mind think different, think in a totally different way. I'm sorry, I think I cut you off.
No, you didn't cut me off. It's okay.
The other
yeah, it's just very hard to do that in the moment.
The other thing that you can do is, like, if I say to you, Jessica, calm down. It doesn't work, right? I'm like, calm down. It's not going to help. We know that.
That's actually one of my biggest triggers.
So
some people tell me to calm down.
To calm down. So you can't just calm down. You've got to, and now a calm body can help facilitate a calmer mind. So what you want to do is you want to give yourself something to calm down against, if that makes sense. So what you can do is you just tighten up all your muscles. And it's called the progressive muscle relaxation exercise. But I think it works best for me if you just tighten your arms and your abs and your legs, and you just hold as tight as you possibly can for as long as you can. And like, you know, Jessica, if you want to do it with me, tighten up everything and hold it and hold it and hold it. And everyone out there, if you're listening, do it. No one's looking at you. It's okay. And then you hold it for, like, let's say another 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Now totally relax. Do you feel it?
Yeah.
So the
My anxiety is always, like, in my chest.
Yeah. Because the feeling becomes physical, and then it just kind of takes over. So by changing your thoughts and just getting very simple down to, you know, what do you see? What do you hear? What do you feel? What do you smell? And then doing that muscle relaxation exercise, it can have the effect of just actually calming your body and giving your mind a chance to kind of, you know, also calm down, and then you can talk to yourself.
Yeah, because I feel like I get in such a whirlwind that, like, nobody, like, nothing anybody could say would, like, I just spiral, like, nobody can calm me down when I get triggered like that.
The other thing is, often when people get triggered, they imagine the worst. And they, in their minds, they see, like, awful things happening. Like, whatever they fear, they imagine in their mind, and it feels very real. And then they have very real feelings in the present about a future situation that may not happen.
I've heard you talk about that on your show, the what if. Like, what, don't get in a what if or something.
Right. Remember what is. But the other
not
thing, what if is fear. And fear about the future causes anxiety in the present. What is reality, and it is the antidote to fear. So when you remember what is, it stops you from spinning into the what if. But if you are in a what if, if you're visualizing something, if you're imagining something in your head and it's horrible, why not just imagine the opposite? So, like, what's something that you're nervous about right now, if you don't mind sharing?
My appointment that I have is that I'm training my dog.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like relieved that I'm getting the dog training, but I feel very nervous that the dog trainer is just going to say that there's no hope and that my dog is going to be, like, aggressive forever. And it makes me very anxious.
Okay. All right. So the what if is there's no hope. Your dog is going to be aggressive forever. And that feels overwhelming. So why not try...
She hasn't even met the dog yet, but still, right. This is my feeling.
So the what is this is a dog trainer who trains dogs. I'm sure this dog trainer does not just train non-aggressive dogs. I'm sure this dog trainer trains all kinds of dogs, right? That's what is.
Right.
And has experience. Have you talked? Presumably, you've talked to this dog trainer.
Yeah, she said that, like, she's gonna make my dog like the best possible dog version of herself, but that every dog personality is different. So there are some things that I might just have to watch for forever, which that in itself made me anxious because I felt like I just wanted like a magic wand where she would just be perfect.
Oh.
So her saying like there are things that like she was reassuring, but she was like, I won't know more until I meet your dog, which is today. Right. But I just woke up feeling anxious about it.
Okay. So one of the other things you can do, so you're imagining her, maybe you're imagining something like she meets your dog and says, oh yeah, this dog is, you know, a lost cause. I can do nothing with this dog, which of course makes you feel worried. But you can imagine the opposite. I mean, if you're imagining it, why not imagine the opposite? Why not imagine the dog trainer coming and being awesome and saying, oh, this dog is totally trainable, right?
Right.
And so sometimes
I feel like I get really locked into a thought and I like can't get off of that thought.
Yes. So first you challenge it with the what if and the what is, and then you can imagine the opposite of your fear, because it's all in your imagination anyway. So why not also imagine a good outcome? They're equally as likely, right? So using the power of visualization and really imagining the dog trainer coming and saying, oh, you know, this dog is so sweet, and yeah, this is why she's aggressive, and it's a she, right? It's a she. This is why your dog's aggressive. That can also calm you down, because now you're having future thoughts about something that goes well, which then you feel better. So your mindset is so powerful. And you want to use it to your advantage when your mind is tricking you and going to a scary place and making you panic. Then you want to counter it by some of these things that I've talked about, which I hope are helpful.
No, they definitely are. I feel like right now, like the world in general, I'm like a very liberal person, and I don't know about everyone's views, but I feel like the world in general right now, it feels like it feels like the apocalypse to me, like in terms of like the weather, like it feels like global warming, and then this Harvey Weinstein thing, and then it just feels like everything right now is like so crazy. So it's very hard to be centered in your own life when like the world in general feels so hectic. So I find myself like, even if I have a good day, like I go on the news and then suddenly I'm anxious again. It's like a very particular, like I've never felt like I'm living more in history than in my life.
Yeah.
Which is like good, because it has people talking about things that should have been talked about a long time ago, but it's also just a lot to handle at once. So I feel that if you are an anxious person like myself, it's very difficult to like find like peace when everything around you outside of your own life is so chaotic.
Feels sick. Yes.
All the time.
I just want to say to the person that's calling in, can you call back when I'm done talking with Jessica? Thank you, caller. Jessica, I hear you. When the world feels chaotic and we can't feel and out of control and scary, it can just be very triggering for all of us. And sometimes it feels so big and so scary that we can end up focusing on trying to control our own bodies or, you know, something like that as a way of dealing with and having a sense of mastery over this scary world. But I think you're not alone in your feeling about what's going on in the world right now. And I hope you can just maintain kind of a reassuring stance with yourself and that will help.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for your time, Dr. Nina. I always appreciate it. I'm going to try those exercises.
Okay, and let us know how it goes. And let us know how it goes with your dog.
I will.
Okay.
I'll talk to you.
Bye.
Thank you so much.
Bye. Aw. Yeah, I mean, what's... I don't think I'm ready to talk about it right now, except to say that I've been hearing a lot from my patients and people online about how this Harvey Weinstein sexual harassment hashtag Me Too has affected them. Oh, there's my caller. Hi, caller. You're on with Dr. Nina.
Yeah, Dr. Nina, this is Larry. How are you?
Larry from Burbank. Good to hear from you.
Yeah, you too. You know, I heard from the previous caller kind of what's going on, and you did mention the something that really makes a lot of sense, which is the four senses exercise, just to stop and sense what you're sensing, and that kind of, that might, when I do it, it may take my mind off of what's going on, just focus on what's around me at that moment. And it occurred to me that really is something I've been talking about with a lot of people, something I've just taken up called mindfulness. You know, I can see where a regular practice of that would really can help a lot of people, even without, crisis.
Oh, yes, mindfulness is very important. I mean, how do you define mindfulness?
I try not to use the other M word, which is meditation. And when some people call it mindfulness meditation, which it is, but it's just being in that moment, sitting and being aware of those four senses. And one of the main foundations is being okay with the inevitable, which is that the mind will wander, and to make that wandering mind part of the practice. And what's really good is it's sort of like depositing psychic money in my bank, so that hopefully I'll be better able to do this in a moment of temporary crisis, since I've been doing it when I sit as a regular practice. So it's not about discovering the Buddha and lowering my blood pressure to 120 over 80, which would be huge for me, but just sitting, simply sitting and doing what you described so well with the four senses exercise.
I think what you're talking about is awareness plus interest. And it's the the interest part that's the most important. When we have awareness with disinterest, we can't be with ourselves. I mean, I often say that the difference between loneliness and solitude is loneliness is when you're alone with nothing, and that's when people often turn to food to fill up, or because food symbolically represents relationship and all of that. But solitude is really what you're talking is connected with mindfulness, because solitude is when you are alone with an available, present, supportive, interested part of yourself.
Right. I don't want to use the word unlonely, but that's all that comes to mind. An unlonely inner world. People sitting, the wise men on the mountain, not even that, someone camping alone may not be lonely at all. Most folks who can live that way are not,
And many people feel acutely lonely even in the presence of others. In fact, there's nothing worse than having that sense of loneliness when you're surrounded by people. When you're surrounded by people and you feel an ache of loneliness, you are definitely more vulnerable to using food for fulfillment. But when I like that you brought in the idea of mindfulness, because it does very much go with that sense of getting connected to a part of you that is nice, nice, supportive, interested. It's key.
Yeah,
it's turning when you turn your inner critic into a friend, you can practice mindfulness, but you can't do it without it.
Yeah. What's interesting is that some friends who have food issues have attempted with some degree of success using mindfulness when they're triggered by food. And the mindfulness is not to be confused in any way, shape, or form with willpower. And it varies between gritting their teeth and just breathing again and getting back to their four senses, hopefully away from the refrigerator. There's a lot of gray area between willpower and mindfulness, but I think if people who train themselves more as a habit are maybe able to do that. And that's not the end-all be-all, but it's just something to consider.
It is something to consider, but remember, people think they're being triggered by food. They're being triggered by something else, and they're turning to food as a solution.
So right. I was using shorthand, and that was incorrect.
No. You're just bringing up a point where so many. No, I appreciate you bringing up the point because you're saying, hey, you know, these people are triggered by food, and then they use mindfulness to just step away from the fridge. And I'm saying, well, okay, that's good, but you got to dig deeper because they're actually not being triggered by whatever's in the fridge. They're being triggered by something, and they're going to the fridge as a solution to either, you know, escape, express, calm themselves, something. So, yes, is that a good strategy if you can't get to what it is that the true trigger is? But just, yes, absolutely. But just being aware that there is another trigger that may be hidden, but very much in operation. The unconscious, hidden, but, you know, hidden from awareness, but not out of operation.
What's interesting is that when you describe that, let's say if I am having some inner conflict and the pick your food is calling, when I sit and do the four senses exercise and be aware of that phenomenon that's going on, I am being curious, not critical. I'm just sitting with it consciously. Another thing that shifting gears is the previous caller talked about the media, and what I do with some success, but there's some compulsion about getting into it, the opposite, is I give myself a media blackout. I just shut down the computer. I don't watch TV. I don't listen to all the talking heads talking about Armageddon. And when anyone accuses me of having my head in the sand, I agree completely. But that's from it's therapy to just shut the media off, on a regular basis.
And that actually, that's a very good idea. And it goes with what I was talking about earlier about being on a magazine diet and a social media diet. If you are on those, choose people that support the way that you think or the way that you feel. So, you know, what I was going to say, and you just sort of opened the door again perfectly, was that, if you are on, say, Facebook and you're following people that make you feel bad about yourself, unfollow them and follow people who make you feel supported and understood and who promote, you know, healthy relationship to food and self, people who inspire you, not shame you. But yeah, being sometimes the news is just too, it's just too horrible, and it affects us too much. So I occasionally have gone on a media diet myself. So otherwise it's just too, it's too upsetting. Yeah.
Yeah, it's, you know, if I'm sort of beating this to death, but if there were a good news channel, nothing but good news, well, the reason there are none is because that saying, if it bleeds, it leads, and they want to sell advertising, so it's, you know, disaster this and disaster that. I'm still being an ostrich, but I'm a better feeling ostrich by just, you know, maybe even throwing out the baby with the bathwater, but just cutting it off entirely.
And it's just for a limited time, right? I mean, it's not like you're never going to look at the news again. You're saturated, and so this is you protecting yourself. And that is taking a stance of self-care, which, you know, that's the key. Self-care versus self-condemnation.
Exactly. Okay.
Well, Larry, thank you so much for joining us and for sharing your thoughts and for, you know, a lot of people hear the term mindfulness and I think they use it in different ways, but I really like the way that you describe mindfulness. It's not the absence of thought, it's the interest in your thoughts.
Exactly.
So,
exactly.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing that and for hopefully giving people some food for thought.
And right back at you. Thank you.
You're so welcome. Call me next week.
Will do.
Okay.
Thanks.
Bye.
Right. Bye-bye.
And that is our show today. thank you so much for joining me. And I am here every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Pacific here on LA Talk Radio, Channel 2, to give you the skinny on weight loss without dieting and talk about anything related to food, weight, and body image and health. Visit me at winthedietwar.com. And I'd also love to hear from you, so send me a message on through my website or Facebook or Twitter with any questions that you'd like me to cover on the show, or call in next week. See you then. Bye-bye.
You're listening to The Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle-Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.